Hare Krishna. Welcome. I titled this talk today, Even God Likes to Dance. I'm going to talk about rasas, rasa, today. First of all, Vedanti tattva vidas tattvam yajjyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate Srimad Bhagavatam. God is realized in three features: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahman is energy, pure spirit. In Christianity, what do we call it? Do you know? The Holy Ghost, Holy Spirit. Next level is diversity. God in the heart, inside everyone's heart. Humans only? No. Blade of grass? Yes. Animals, birds, insects? Yes. Everywhere. Diversity. Then, Bhagavan. Personality. Personality. How does it work? Which is best? Which is desirable? Well, I guess we could argue they're all desirable. They're all good. They're all states of spiritual realization, spiritual consciousness. But they're different. So, here are three approaches to God. Pick the one you like. The most common and the most widely accepted approach to God in any religion you want to name, if you accept that there is God, there is such a thing as God, if you accept that as your basic thesis, then the first one is fear. Fear of God. Fear of God? Fear of retribution. Fear of what's going to happen. Bad karma. Sinful reaction. Negative result. Oh my God, I hope I don't die. It's all going to catch up with me. You know? Fear. Do people have a relationship of fear with God? Oh, yes, my friends. How many? More than you know. That's the motivating factor. Keeps them in line. You got a fear of the government? The stick? The law? The police? The legal system? That might keep you in line. Doesn't look like it keeps many people in line here in Ireland, but keeps some people in line. Right? So fear. Very powerful. The next level is respect or reverence. And that's generally how, that's obviously, it's more positive than fear. And that's generally how we relate to God. And that's common too, to most all religions, no? We're respectful, we come in, we bow down, we say prayers, we say mantras. Other churches, you bow down in one way or another. You greet God, right? Awe and reverence. Because God is so powerful. He's omnipotent. He's omniscient. He's omnipresent. He's everything. Respect or reverence. When we generally mean or apply respect or reverence, we are generally applying it to a concept of God as energy, in many cases, as energy. We don't necessarily name God or describe Him. The third level, arguably the highest level of approach to God, is love. It's love. Now, we're in the realm of rasa. Only now can we approach relationship with God. Isn't to say that these other situations, fear or respect, is not a relationship. Not directly, because it's not necessarily a reciprocal relationship of exchange. This is what we're trying to explain today. Okay? Love is the highest level. And that's what we're interested in primarily here. So there are five rasas. A rasa is a relationship, a flavor, a taste, a mellow, a sentiment. You have a rasa with your child, right? You have certain things that you exchange, there's feelings you exchange, there's a bond that's developed. You have a different rasa with your spouse. You have a different rasa with your parents. And each one, each parent, different. Right? So rasa is a relationship, an emotional bond, an exchange of energy. There are five. Now, we'll get to that. So how does it work? What comes first? Is it as above, so below? Or is it as below, so above? Which way does it normally go? Does it come as above, so below? What does that mean? It means as it is in the spiritual realm, or as God has decreed, as God has created it, therefore, so below, that's where we are. There's actually lower planets than this one, by the way. So we're doing, you know, fairly good. We're in the earthly planets. We're not in the hellish planets. They have those. As above, so below. We are not the template and the pattern that goes up and tells God how it's going to be. No. Okay? Do we also not say mind over matter? Do we say matter over mind? No. Suppose you want to build a house. You acquire property. What's the first thing you do about building your house? You conceive it in your mind, don't you? Oh, I want this many bedrooms. I wanted this. I want that. I want marble and I want glass. And I want parquet floors, I don't know, in the mind. And then you get an architect and then it's built. No? Mind over matter. That's how it works. So what is that saying? Everything comes down from the spiritual world. So it means that whatever we're involved in here is actually a reflection of what? Of the higher reality of the spiritual world. This is what they do in the spiritual world as well. Exactly the way in which we do it? Well, not exactly. Not exactly. Because ours is, shall we say, tainted a little bit. So there's a wonderful painting, actually. I think it's in the Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, the concept is beautiful tree on the bank of a lake. Nice, calm, peaceful lake, right? The tree itself represents the spiritual world. The reality. The eternal reality. And what do we see on the water at the base of the tree? What do we see? Yeah, we see the tree again, don't we? In all of its detail. Is it the real tree? No, it's a reflection. But everything is there as you see it in the tree. So the material world is this reflection of the spiritual world. Everything comes from God. Okay. The first level of relationship is Shanta Rasa. Shanta means?
Peace.
Peace. So it is a relationship of neutrality, awe, and reverence. No, fear is something else. Fear is what we don't want. We don't want a relationship of fear with God. We don't want a relationship of fear with anybody, do we? Not if we can help it, right? So the first level is neutrality, awe, reverence, shanta. Now, Prabhupada has explained, our founder Acharya, many, many times in many places, that people who accept God to be energy and only energy are generally called jnanis or philosophical speculators at the very, well, they're impersonalists. They don't accept that God could take a personal form because they believe that we all have personal forms in the created world, so the spiritual world must be the counter opposite. So God must not have a spiritual, a human type form. He must only have an energetic form. You see? Does he have an energetic form? Yes. It's called Brahman. It's called spirit. He does have this form. Can you realize God on this level? Oh, yes. You can. So, that is not the first level of Shanta Rasa because it's impersonal. All of the five rasas that we're going to talk about, Shanta on reverence, Dasya, service, Sakya, friendship, Vatsalya, parent relationship, and Madhurya, conjugal intimate relationship. All of those can only take place with a concept of God as a person. That's the only way it can happen. Can you give me an example of you in this world, in this lifetime, having a relationship with energy as opposed to a person? You could argue, yes, when I go into a beautiful garden in nature, something comes over me and I feel so connected to the plants, to nature, to the earth. I have a relationship with that. But is it a reciprocal relationship? It's not, in the sense that it's static. It's not dynamic. There's no exchange. So for these rasas, these five types of relationships, it necessitates a subject and an object. Just like any of our relationships with our friends, with the guy at the spa where we buy the newspaper in the morning, with your parents, with people who work for you, right? With your love, your lover, your spouse, all of these require a subject and an object. Same thing in terms of our relationship, a reciprocal loving relationship with God. Okay? A few quotes as we go. Great sages have attained this neutral position, Shanta, by practicing austerity, penance, and meditation in order to control the senses. That's the yoga process, no? Such sages are generally called mystic yogis, and in most cases they are inclined to appreciate the spiritual pleasure of the impersonal feature of God, of the Absolute Truth. They are practically unaware of the transcendental pleasure derived from personal contact with God Himself. Right? You don't know what it's like. For example, somebody might tell you about a friend of theirs that they're just dying to introduce you to, and they tell you this and this and this about this person. They go on and on about this person. But it doesn't mean anything until you meet them and establish your own connection, right? Now, as humans, what do here? We marvel at the material creation because it's so wondrous and wonderful and so diverse, don't we? We constantly look at pictures on Facebook of nature. People send pictures around the big snowstorm, the East Coast of America this weekend. Everybody snowed in. A couple of my clients were sending me pictures of their backyard that disappeared under the snow. We marvel at the material creation. The yogis, the sages, the realized souls, they marvel at the impersonal spiritual energy behind the creation. Humans marvel at material creation. Yogis and sages marvel at the spiritual energy behind it. But what do we do as devotees of Krishna? What do we marvel at? Though we appreciate the material and spiritual creations, both, we yearn to meet and come to know who? The guy behind it all. The Creator himself. If you go and you see a magnificent creation, have you been to the Grand Canyon in Arizona? You go, wow. Never mind, you can just go here in Ireland. There's all kinds of wonderful places. Right? And it's absolutely astounding. But what if you met the person that created it? What would that be like? That's what we're after. That's Krishna. That's God. Transcendental pleasure derived in the association with the Supreme Person, with God, is far greater than the pleasure derived from impersonal Brahman realization. Far greater, because we're dealing with personalities. Right? The four-handed form of the Lord, manifested in a bluish color, that's Vishnu, is the reservoir of all pleasure and the center of our living force. Where does Vishnu reside? In the heart. God in the heart. Paramatma, supreme soul. We have an Atma, our individual soul, and next to it, standing there, if you will, is Vishnu, Paramatma. Vishnu means he who lives everywhere. That's what it means. Actually, when we see this eternal form of Vishnu, we, along with many other perfected souls, become immediately captivated by what? By the beauty of the Lord. This is called Shantarasa, or the neutral stage of devotional service. So you don't enter into Shantarasa if you're still looking at impersonal, energetic level of God realization. You're not there yet. Okay. When a person comes to the stage of appreciating Vishnu, he is then at the beginning of devotional service, of bhakti. That's the beginning, the very beginning. When you recognize that God has a form. Now we've begun. So what's it say in the Bhagavad Gita? Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Shochati Na Kankshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. This is the 18th chapter at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. When one achieves the stage of Brahma, which is understanding that you are spirit, everything is spirit, and we are one with the spirit, he becomes Prasannatma. He becomes fully satisfied. Doesn't need anything. Happy within himself. Na shochati na kankshati. he does not lament anymore. Can you imagine your life with no disappointment? None. Nothing brings you down at all. Does it mean nothing happens? No, stuff happens. It doesn't affect you. Na shochiti, na kangshiti. He doesn't desire. What, no desires? No material desires. No desires connected to the body. Desires connected to the soul alone. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. Sarveshu bhuteshu is all the beings in the material world. Sama, you are equal to all of them. You see them all equally. You don't judge. Can you imagine? You don't judge. This is good, this is bad. Look at this person's hairdo. Look at this person such and such. You don't judge. You're sama. You're equal. Mad bhaktim labhate param. At that time, he becomes mad bhakti. He becomes my devotee. Only then does he fully become my devotee. And labhate param, he attains the supreme destination. Bhagavad Gita. So, what are some examples in the Shastra, in the Vedas, of devotees who are in Shantarasa, the four Kumaras, Sanaka, Sanatan, Sananda, and Sanat Kumara. They were the sons of Lord Brahma, the creator. They were born liberated. Four of them. They never went beyond the age of four. Well, they went beyond the age of 4 or 5, but they never took bodies beyond the age of four or five-year-old boys. But they were in Brahman realization, in personal realization. So they're famous ones. Such persons give stress to liberation and detachment from the materialistic way of life. People who realize God on the impersonal level, their focus is on liberation and detachment. Is liberation and detachment a good thing? Yeah. Detachment is, again, to be unaffected by what's going on around you. Becoming detached. By needing less and less. Not accumulating more and more. Not going to the, what do they call the black, Stephen's Day sales. And just buying stuff for no particular reason. No, that's not an example. Liberation is freedom from repeated birth and death. We are on the wheel of samsara. Repeated birth and death. Right? Liberation, get off that wheel. So that on that level, yeah. So the four Kumaras went to visit Vishnu in Vaikuntha, spiritual planet, spiritual world. In the spiritual sky, immediately became attracted to the personal form of the Lord. Once they met God face to face, they let go of their impersonal realization and entered into a shantarasa with God. On reverence. So, here in the material world, you too have neutral relationships with people. There's all kinds of people that you may see regularly in your daily life. They're not your friends. You don't do anything with them. It could be the bus driver. It could be the guy down at the spa, as I mentioned. It could be one of your teachers at school. You know, could be different people. So there are many of those kinds of relationships even here in your life in the material world. Okay, the second one. The second level is dasya. Dasya means service. We could say servitude. I don't know if that word has a great ring these days, but it's a relationship where you enter into service. We know that there are many clergy and clerical people in many religions who become monks, priests, nuns, imams, what do you call it in Judaism, rabbis, right? Why? Because they want to serve. They want to serve God. They want a more complete or a more fully involved relationship. And they want to be of service to their people, their congregation, whomever. It's very, in Ireland you see it, a lot of the priests are running the homeless shelters and feeding people and organizing rooms and charitable services. You know, it's very common. To next level. So dasya is service due to what? Service to God due to affection. That's why. Due to fear, due to retribution? No. Due to affection. Because you love, you serve. You want to serve. Out of love. Transcendental affection equals service, which is continuous affection for or attraction to Krishna. It's continuous. I've been so moved. I'm just so overwhelmed with my heart opening and what I've experienced in terms of my revelation, my realization, my epiphany in my spiritual practice, that my love for God, my affection has increased so much that I have to just give everything up. Well, you don't have to give everything up. Let's be clear. I want to give everything up and just serve God. That is a state. You can still do this and keep doing what you're doing. So let's just be clear about that. But you want to serve in some meaningful way out of love. Yeah. So some of the servitors of Krishna when he was on the planet 5,000 years ago, there's a conversation here that Prabhupada has included in the Nectar of Devotion, which I'm going to read because I liked it. They're pointing out the different servants of God. In a conversation between Jambavati and Kalindi, her friend, Jambavati inquired, well, who is this personality now coming and circumambulating, walking around Krishna? And Kalindi replied, oh, well, she is Ambika, the superintendent of the entire creation. She is circumambulating God, Krishna. What's another name for Ambika?
Durga.
Exactly. Then the superintendent of universal affairs. Then Jambavati inquired, who's the personality who's now trembling at the sight of Krishna? And Kalindi replied, oh, that is Lord Shiva. He is in charge of winding things up at the end of all creation. Three forces in the universe: creation, maintenance, destruction, right? What is it? Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya. Then Jambavati inquired, who is this person offering prayers? And Kalindi said, oh, that is Lord Brahma, the creator himself, who has created all the diversity of life and the planets and everything else within each universe. Wow. Whoa. He's bowing down. Then she said, well, who's that person who's falling on the ground and offering respect now to Krishna? And Kalindi replied, oh, that is Indra, the king of heaven. He's the king of all the gods. And what is his portfolio? What's he in charge of? The weather. He's the weatherman. in the sense, oh, he's rain. He's rain and thunder, lightning. Sindhu. Interesting. Look at the rain we had. Huh? The rain we had in December. Very, very destructive. Very destructive. Look at the flooding. How many people lost their homes? How much is that going to cost for repairs? And Christmas, which is very important, it's a big event in this country. Many people were not able to celebrate their Christmas. Huh? Why does such a thing happen? Because we're not behaving collectively in a conscientious manner. When we have natural disasters and floods and earthquakes and volcanoes and pestilence and you name it, that's because we have generated negative karma collectively. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. Yeah, you can say it's global warming. Well, why do we have global warming? Because of all of our mischief to begin with fossil fuels, etc. And wholesale animal slaughter. Okay, I don't want to get too far off topic here. All right. Then Jambavati inquired, well, who's this person that's come along with the demigods and is laughing and having jokes with them? Oh, well, that is my elder brother, Kalindi said. Yamaraj, the king of death. Death himself, laughing and joking. Yeah, now this whole thing, you know, the Grim Reaper, all this business. Yamaraj is a very, very good-looking soul. His other name is Dharmaraj. Dharma means he is the king of Dharma. Proper behavior. But he also, his portfolio is pulling your soul out of the body. Go get that one, go get that one, when the time comes. So, this conversation offers a description of all the demigods, including Yamaraj, who are engaged in service. They're all doing various services appointed by God. The universe does not go on in a vacuum, my friends, as much as the scientists like to believe. There are personalities behind everything. If you think, if you walk into a big corporation like Apple, or who else is here, Google, PayPal, all kinds of corporations, you think business just goes on? Because you see all these desks and things. No, there's actually people there. And there's people in charge that are running it. That's how it works. Same thing on the universal level. So, service to God. If we don't want to serve God ourselves, if we fail to serve God, if we don't see the value in serving God, then chances are we are serving what? Kama, krodha, lobha. What does it mean?
Lust, anger, and greed.
Lust, anger, and greed. We're a little too wrapped up in that. Not all of us, perhaps. Or tinges of this and that, no? If you're totally wrapped up in lust, anger, and greed, I don't think you'd be sitting here. In Vrindavan, Krishna had his servants too. Raktak, Patrak, Patri, Madhukanta, Madhuvrata, Rasala, Suvilas, Premakanda, Marandaka, Ananda, Chandrahas, Payoda, Bakula, Rasada, and Sarada. Why so many? Because they all were bound in love to Krishna. And they all wanted to serve. Were they indentured servants? No. No. Out of love. What's more powerful than love? Tell me. Tell me, because I missed it. I need to know. Nothing. Okay, number three. Oh, first though, let me say, you have relationships in which you serve others. Correct? Do you serve your family? Do you serve your clients? Do you serve your customers? Do you serve your boss? Do you serve your friends when they need help? Right? Service, completely natural. Now, if you don't like them and you have to serve, geez, I hate that boss. It makes me do all these things. Now, if you like the boss, I tell you, you'd happily do those things. You remember in school, when we were in school? When we liked the teacher, we did the best in the class, in the subject. Yes or no? And when we didn't like the teacher, can't hear you, not listening, right? Okay, Sakya Rasa, number 3, friendship. Where does this word come from? The root of Sakya is Sakha. What is Sakha?
A branch.
A branch of what? A branch of a tree. So if you're the tree, and these are your branches, these are your friends. They're here to help you. And if you got a lot of friends, then the branches go like this, like that, like an oak. Yeah. Let me call my people. They're everywhere, right? Okay, number 1. When Krishna was here, did he have any friends? Number 1, who comes to mind?
Arjuna,
the Pandavas. The Bhagavad Gita is a struggle in the war, the battle of Kurukshetra, between two groups. The Kauravas and the Pandavas. Related, internecine struggle. Right? So they were cousins. So the Pandavas, Yudhishthir, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, and Sahadev, 5 Pandava brothers, right? So that's, we could say, probably his most famous friends. And among those, who? Arjuna, right? Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to whom? Arjuna, his closest friend. His closest friend and confidant. As a friend. Well, we might argue Balaram, but Balaram, his brother, he was a close friend as well. His older brother, yeah.
Uddhava as well.
Uddhava was another one. Great example. Sometimes Krishna's different names, forms, paraphernalia, and transcendental qualities provoke fraternal love, brotherly love. For instance, this is nice, Prabhupada has included this. Krishna's nice dress, Krishna is a wonderful dresser, in case you're wondering. You fashion conscious people, Krishna's your man, okay? I mean, if he were here, would he be on the cover of GQ? Yes, he would. No question. So, nice dress, strongly built body, all auspicious symptoms on his body. His knowledge of all different languages. Which ones? All of them. His learned teachings in the Bhagavad Gita. Wow, that's pretty impressive. I'm still trying to understand it after 40 years. His uncommon genius in all fields of endeavor. All fields. Not some fields. No, no, yeah, he's kind of good in this thing, but he's not so good over here. No, he's good over there too. Everything. His exhibition of expert knowledge, his mercy. His mercy. His chivalry. Chivalry means he's a protector. He's a born protector. Nothing would happen to you. If you were with Krishna and there was some danger, nothing would happen to you because of his chivalry. His loving behavior, his intelligence, his forgiveness. What is one of the main symptoms of love? Forgiveness, no? Is forgiveness something that's pretty easy to do for most of us? Oh, no. No. It's not easy to do. Sometimes it takes years. Sometimes it takes lifetimes. Let go. They did it to me. Yeah. You're right. They did it to you. Why don't you let go now? I don't want to. Okay. We'll see you back in your next life. Forgiveness. His attraction. Krishna's attraction for all kinds of people. Highly placed, lowly placed, high born, low born, everything in the middle. Yeah. Krishna likes them all. All of them. All colors. Whatever. His wealth and opulence, his happiness, all of these things would invoke brotherly love. That's what it says. Well, how could Krishna have all these things? Well, because he's God. And God is the best at everything. He has no match, no equal. That's the definition of God. Okay? Well, I don't want God to be more important and stronger than me. You don't? Why? Well, it feels like I'm in competition with him. Then your ego is overarching. Your ego is too big. It's not a competition. If you want to play a sport or a game of chess, and you want to have some fun and compete, okay. No problem. You're not here to compete. You're honestly not in this world to compete. You're not here to compete with others. Why? How do I know that for sure? Because when you see somebody that you feel envious of or jealous of, oh, I wish I could do that. I wish I could do it. Like that, or I wish, how come he's so lucky and I'm not? Never mind him. What you're seeing is his good qualities and feeling jealous. What you're not seeing is your own qualities, your own distinct individuality. That's where your fortune lies, in being who you are, not going into competition in your brain with somebody or something else. You cannot compete with this person. Why? Because you're not them. You cannot offer what this person has to offer. Oh, and nor can this person do and be what you are. And when you get that and start becoming yourself at the highest possible level, who cares what everybody else does? Then this person becomes what for you? An inspiration. Not a competitor, not an opponent, not a rival. An inspiration. That's the way it's supposed to be. Right? We don't have to be in competition with God. We want a loving relationship. The associates of Krishna are firmly convinced of Krishna's friendship and protection, and their devotion to Krishna is always fixed. They are fearless, and on an equal level with Krishna, they discharge their transcendental, loving, devotional service. They are fearless. How many things are you afraid of? How many things, people, circumstances, what if this, what if that, what if that happens? What if that doesn't happen? How many things? Well, if you want to see how advanced you are spiritually, then sit down with a pen and piece of paper and write down your fears. And if you're really spiritually advanced, you won't be writing. There won't be any. And if you're sort of spiritually advanced, well, then you might have a few, but maybe a couple of years ago, you had a lot more. Maybe last week you had more. I don't know. Any presence of fear is an absence of spiritual advancement. Because spiritual advancement means I'm a soul, I'm connected to God in relationship, in rasa, and there's absolutely nothing for me to be afraid of. Does that mean I can't get killed or run down by a car or... That could happen, depending on your karma. That could happen. And then you'd be what? I'd be dead. That's right. This body would be dead. And the soul? Oh, on to the next thing. No fear. Now this is beautiful. When the Pandavas were banished by Duryodhana in the Mahabharata and forced to live incognito in the forest, no one could trace out where they were staying. They had to remain in disguise. They were 14 years in exile, because if they were discovered in the final year, what would happen? They'd get another 14 years added on to their sentence to live in the forest, or, you know, disenfranchised. They were all kings and princes. Their kingdom was usurped, you know, through a gambling match, dishonest gambling match. At that time, the great sage Narada met Krishna and said, My dear Krishna, although you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-powerful person, and you are such a close friend with the Pandavas, you of all people. You know, these are your buds, your close friends. How come they've become bereft of their legitimate right to the kingdom, and moreover, they are now living in the forest incognito? Though they are kings and princes by birth, they sometimes must work as ordinary laborers in someone else's house. Is that what happened? That is what happened, according to the story. These symptoms appear to be very inauspicious materially. This is bad karma. What's going on? Why are they being forced to do these things? But the wonder is that the Pandavas, in spite of all this misfortune, have not lost their faith or their love for you. That's the wonder. In fact, they are still always thinking of you, talking about you, and chanting your name in loving friendship. Do you ever have this happen in your life? Some misfortune comes? Oh, yeah, great. After all I've done for you, you know? I went to church every Sunday. How many years? Put money in the box. And now look. You know? And I thought you were my friend. Huh? Do people do that? Am I exaggerating? No, I'm not. I'm just dramatizing for you. No, they do it. So, do we have friends in this world? Do you have friends? Of course. Of course. Sometimes you love your friends more than your parents. Sometimes you love your friends more than family members. Sometimes you love your friends more than your spouse, and now you're in trouble. But it's true. Correct? Sometimes I say to my clients, I say to a gentleman, I'll say, would you rather go away for a nice weekend in the country with your wife? Or would you rather go on a trip with the boys for the weekend?
I'd rather go with the boys.
Okay. All right, number four, vatsalya, parental affection. What's the root word?
Vatsa.
Vatsa means?
Calf.
Calf. It means a little calf. Where do they get that from? Well, we say kids, don't we? Are those your kids? What do you mean, little goats? Are you calling my children little goats? Kids. That's what a kid is, a little goat. And in the Vedic, in Sanskrit, in Hindi as well, yeah? Vatsa. Little one, little calf. That's the affectionate term. So vatsalya is parenting the little calf, the little one. So, does God need parents? Well, yeah. In all his wonderful pastimes and manifestations, does he recruit souls to become his parents? You bet he does. Do you have parents? Yeah. Yeah, he likes the parent thing too. He's quite popular with him. So, what are the big ones for Krishna? Two sets. One set good enough? No, I've got to have two sets of parents. After all, I'm Krishna. Two is better than one, I guess. So who do we have? We have Devaki and Vasudeva. His parents by birth, natural, biological. Well, biological, I might be. It's not exactly biological because it's God. But natural parents, we'll call them. And then we have the most famous two, Yashoda and Nanda. His foster parents. Did they officially adopt him? No. Foster parents. And who did he have the closest relationship with? His foster parents. Because Kamsa, his uncle, was threatening to kill him off because there was a prediction that the eighth child of Devaki would be his slayer. So Kamsa was sitting on the throne, which he stole. And so Krishna had to be taken right away upon his birth and hidden. And he was taken to the home of Nanda and Yashoda, who were Vaishyas or cowherd people, they protected cows, dairy farmers, if you like. And Nanda and Yashoda, he for the first 16 years of his life, that's where he lived, in Vrindavan, rurally, at a rural childhood. And then from 16 he became a city boy. He went to the big city, Mathura. So once Mother Yashoda was his foster mother. Oh, by the way, we see a lot of paintings of, there are those who say that the paintings are so common in India of Mother Yashoda and Krishna, right? You've seen these have been around for millennia. That the Madonna and child in Christian tradition is based on Yashoda and Krishna. Now, we've seen many pictures of depictions of Yashoda and Krishna as a baby. What color is Yashoda? This is in the Nectar of Devotion. What complexion? What is her color? Do you know?
Golden.
Nope. She's always painted golden. My experience has been, if a white person paints it, it looks white. If an Indian paints it, they look Indian. I have a good friend of mine, a devotee, my god brother, who's Chinese. He painted Ram one time. He sure looked Chinese to me. I can show you the painting. You'll say the same. That's kind of how it is. Eye of the beholder kind of thing. Yashoda's complexion is bluish. Most people don't think about that. Small point. Once Mother Yashoda addressed one of her friends in this way. The way it worked with Nanda and Yashoda, the foster parents of Krishna, is they never knew he was God. They knew and didn't know. Basically, they didn't know. Because it would interfere with their parental relationship. Supposing your child was God himself, and that's all you could think about. Oh my God, yes. What do I know? Oh, dude. Right? It would be very confusing. What if I make a mistake? You know, is the roof going to fall in? Or is it hellfire and brimstone? What's going to happen to me? Right? So, Yashoda was under the influence of Yoga Maya, the internal energy which causes a certain kind of illusion, not a bad illusion, so that all she cares, she saw was, this is my baby. That's all she saw. It was just a little baby, and I'm going to take him in hand, right? She addressed one of her friends this way. Nanda Maharaj, my husband, the leader of the cowherd men, worshipped Vishnu along with me. And because of this worship, Krishna has been saved from the clutches of Putana. So all these demons had come to Vrindavan to kill off Krishna in one way, shape, or form. And Krishna would always defeat them. But in Yashoda's mind, oh, that wasn't him. He's a boy. He would never be able to do that. That was because Vishnu was protecting him, because we were worshiping Vishnu. And that was the result. And the twin Arjun trees that Krishna knocked over and the two demigods trapped came out and they were set free. She says, no, that was a strong wind that knocked the trees down. My little Krishna could never have done anything like that. The same thing with the lifting of Govardhan Hill, where Krishna stood there for 7 days and seven nights, lifted Govardhan Hill and all of the whole population of Vrindavan, including the cows, was protected by the umbrella of the hill from the terrifying storm that Indra had sent. No, Krishna wasn't doing that. Didn't you see the coward men with their sticks? They were holding up the hill. They were the ones that was doing. So she could not adjust her mind to any of that. Shukadeva Goswami tells King Parikshit, all the mothers of the coward boys were illusioned by the covering influence of the Yogamaya potency. All of the coward maidens, the older ones, like Yashoda's age, like Krishna's mother's age, they were all maternal. Just like when you have a child and your child has a friend over to visit to play, you treat that child in a very parental manner, the same as you do your child. And you look after that child, correct? So in the same way, that's what all the coward women, the older ones, would do. Okay, last one. So you have, before I say that, here in your life in the material world, you have various parental figures. Your parents. I got two sets of parents too, by the way. I only met one and a half of them, though. Never met my father. So you have your parents. You have uncles and aunts. Or older people, sometimes a friend of the family you call Uncle So-and-so or Aunt So-and-so, but they're only family friends. There are parental figures as well. Or you are a parental figure for certain people. Okay. The last one is conjugal love, madhurya. What's the root of that word? Madhu.
Honey.
Sweet. Oh, sweet. So sweet. Conjugal love or intimacy. What? God? Conjugal love and intimacy? Yes. Who would have known? Remember, as above, so below. Why are we interested in conjugal love, intimacy? Why are we interested in marriage and procreation? Because God is. This is how it comes down. It doesn't carry any shadow. With us, that can carry a lot of shadow energy. Right? In fact, we get in a lot of trouble with that in this world. But do not project that on Krishna. It's not like that in the spiritual world. Okay? So, two categories, Samboga and Vipralamba. Samboga is conjugal love in direct contact. When you are with your loved one, when you're with God directly, that's what's preferred when two people love each other, no? And Vipralamba means separation. Vipralamba rasambode param bujaya te nama. Vipralamba has three phases. Now, you can identify with this when in the past, if you've gone into relationships, maybe right now, I don't know. This is in separation, love and separation. Oh, you can't see him, you can't be with him. He's constantly thinking about the lover. Causes you to become distracted from what you're doing. You're not focused on your duties. Or second, that's purva rag. Second one is mana, apparent anger, jealousy, or neglect. Because he's gone off. What's he doing talking to that woman over there? What's she got that I don't have? The jealousy comes out, or anger. You feel neglected. Yeah, we do that too. And then pravasa, separation by distance, when we're actually apart, and we're unable to sleep, to focus, right? Because we miss our loved ones so. So, works the same. The difference is, when we miss them, it causes our love to expand and to intensify. Our love for Krishna intensifies more greatly. Okay. So, since I've entitled this, Even God Likes to Dance, in Samboga direct contact, Krishna would what? With the coward boys and the gopis, the coward maidens, he would play his flute, sing, decorate the gopis with flowers and fragrances, engage in amorous pastimes, and dance the rasa dance by the light of the full moon on the bank of the Yamuna River. Right? He would sing, play, dance. He would have a keli. Is that not the Irish word for it? What's a keol? Yeah, and a keli is like the whole, right? So, what's the Sanskrit word for fun and partying? Keli. K-E-L-I. Keli. I wonder which came first, the Irish one or the Sanskrit one? What do you reckon? Same word, my friends. You like to dance, you like to sing, because God does. Even God likes to dance. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Any questions?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You started talking about Narada approaching Krishna and almost scorning him about not helping the Pandavas. Actually, what I'm interested in, Krishna said goodbye.
Krishna said what? Well, what Narada said was he's amazed that the Pandavas, their affection for Krishna did not diminish. I don't know if Krishna answered him beyond that, so I can't make up what he said. I can tell you this. When you begin to cultivate your spiritual relationship with God, with Krishna, or whatever manifestation of God that you like, you are generating the light, right? You begin to shine more. You're generating more light. You're generating knowledge, understanding, realization. Do you think for 1 minute that your faith, your belief, will not be tested? Oh, it will be tested. It must be tested. Do you ever go to school and never get a test? You did? Well, then the rest of us went to the wrong school. It must be tested. That's the way it works. So that's what was happening with the Pandavas. Isn't it interesting that his closest friends underwent the you could argue, the worst possible tests imaginable, where most of us would not be able to survive in exile for 14 years. Having lived in palaces, now we're living in the forest, living outdoors, living rough. Anybody else? Yes, Yashoda did have suspicions from time to time. Like the time she said, Krishna, have you been eating dirt?
That's right.
And Krishna said, your brother said you were eating dirt. I was not eating dirt, Mom. Come here. Open your mouth. I want to see if you're eating dirt. So Krishna went like this, and she saw the entire cosmic manifestation in his mouth. She went,
Including herself.
So, you see, every now and then she was tipped off that, you know, this wasn't an ordinary child. This is God. So, yeah, can you imagine? It would be confusing. So then they cover over right away with the yoga maya, because she's going to short circuit if I don't do it right away. So, yes, that's true.
We'd like to thank Juliana for a very enlightening talk. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.